You're listening to Thunder Quack Podcast Network.
Hello there, and welcome back to Rebel Cells, the Star Wars animation podcast for the Bad Batch episode Bad Territory. I am, as always, your host, Michael Cohen, and joining me, we're down in altitude is Kyle Avery, but we do still have an illustrious Joe Hogan.
Whew. Two-thirds, two out of three ain't bad.
Yeah, it's not the full Sad Batch, but that's all right. We'll manage. But you know what? It's appropriate because the Bad Batch gets broken up in this episode. It's not everybody all at once. It makes sense to me. Bad Territory. Listen, this is our last episode that we're recording in advance. We're actually recording this one well in advance. It's kind of a weird one to go out on. Except for the fact that it is very clearly paving the way for big stuff in the episode after it. This is a little bit more of a classic Bad Batch episode. This is a little bit more of a like, hey, we've got a mission. Let's go on the mission. The mission doesn't really have anything directly to do with the larger storyline. It is an errand. It is more of the season one, season two sort of vibe for it, which I found very interesting. We just get a little detour returning to the way that the Bad Batch operated a lot in those first two seasons, just kind of, you know, doing favors going out on a very specific mission with a beginning, middle, and end. The thing that makes this one noteworthy is that the mission is for Fennec Shand. So obviously having Fennec back is exciting. But this episode overall, for me, it's just kind of okay. It's not bad by any stretch of the imagination, but I just think when you compare it to the heights of what we've gotten so far in season three, this one feels like a bit of a detour. Doesn't quite move the story forward as much as I would like. And at a certain point becomes very kind of action focused. And actually felt like a mid-season Clone Wars fight to me with the bug guy. It felt very kind of just, you know, yeah, that's fine. But I mean, overall, the show's always great. And as always, it looks phenomenal. It looks amazing. Yeah. So at least it has that going for it as a consistent strength, so that even when the episodes are a little less intense, a little less interesting, a little less tied into the overall story, we're still happily going along for the ride. Cause you know, here we are in a new location with some fun new stuff. So that's kind of my jam on it. How'd you feel about it, Joe?
Yeah, I was very lukewarm about it. I mean, I was excited that Fennec was back, but like, other than that, like the actual mission itself, like, you know, it had some fun moments, but for the most part, especially after the previous week, which was my favorite two episodes of the season.
Yeah.
It was just like, I don't know, it just kind of felt like the brakes were pumped a little too abruptly for me. So I guess my Joe Hogan grievance of the week is that I was just bored for most of this episode. But like you said, though, they're obviously setting up more stuff. I think it's very deliberate that, you know, me, you, and Kyle and I guess everybody who had that like early access, like, I think there's a reason they cut off at episode 8, because like, we're gonna get some good stuff real soon.
Yeah. So as of us recording this, we're a few weeks away from that. But for you guys, it's next week. So don't worry about it. It'll be fine. Yeah, I think this will end up being a shorter episode by virtue of the fact that it's just the two of us. And also, there isn't really a lot to get into here, which are always my famous last words. But I don't think just going through my notes a second ago, this is a very, very straightforward episode. I don't want to say paint by numbers because I don't think it is. But the plot of what's going on with the mission is not what's interesting here, which again, you know, back to what we said about the fifth episode, right? I don't remember the title of it, The Return. Very similar, right? Where we're like, this is very much about character and not so much about the plot. This is another one of those where we're very much getting into this for, a little bit more of the Crosshair stuff, a little bit more of the Crosshair Hunter dynamic, but also just sort of, I think it's also just a little bit of a break. It's a little bit of a breather before we get into a couple of, I think, very intense episodes going into what will be the big reveal of the season.
There's a lot coming that has not been resolved yet. So I think you're right. I think it's going to be a lot of big things happening coming at us very, very fast.
Because I think if you look at the pacing of it, you look at the pacing of the episodes in general, which is difficult for us because we kind of got them all at once. So we were able to binge them. But you look at the pacing of the episodes and the way that it's working with, it's like, it's a double episode. And then I'll just say it right now. We'll talk about it at the end as well, but I'll just say it right now. I am fairly positive that Asajj will be next week. The end of this episode, it very much points in that direction. We know that she's going to be in the season because of the trailer. So the way that mystery is set up at the end of the episode, if it is something else, it is a bait and switch and it's disingenuous. These writers have not been known to be disingenuous with their storytelling. So I am very confident in saying that the next episode is almost certainly when Asajj shows up. Also, the fact that this is where they cut off the screeners indicates that Asajj is coming. And then after that, you know, we very quickly are going to get into another two-parter, one episode of which is Identity Crisis, which I maintain. I have no knowledge. This is totally speculation. Like just to be really, really clear of what we do and do not have access to. I have no information that makes me believe this other than my belief that Tech is alive. And I mean, everything we talked about last week, right? As well as the titles of the episodes. I fully believe that we will get the reveal in those episodes in that two-parter that Tech is that shadow clone. And then you know, it'll be a bit of a roller coaster to the end of the season and the Bad Batch finding that out if they don't find it out in those two episodes, and then, you know, what are they going to do about it? And that's going to be the emotional drive behind the assault on Tantiss, right? But then there will be like the larger galaxy-wide sort of clone trooper revolution aspect of it. Fairly confident in saying that that's the rest of the season. And there will probably be an episode in there of like either them trying to get Tech back or trying to get information on where Tech is, on how they can get to Tech, right? And I think it'll be that Turbo Tank episode. What's it called? I think the title is Juggernaut. There's an episode titled Juggernaut, which can only be about that because that's what those Turbo Tanks are referred to as, right? As Juggernauts. So, even though we don't know the rest of the season, I look at those titles and I was like, I think we know the rest of the season. And it's just a matter of, filling in the blanks. But this episode is, I think it, when we look at it overall in the season, it'll kind of feel right for the pacing of it, of like, okay, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Let's have a fun adventure, a one-off that doesn't really have a lot of heavy lifting in it, so that when we get into the Asajj stuff and when we get into the Tech stuff, that we're kind of refreshed and ready for it. Because otherwise I think it would just be, if you went from last week's right into it, I think it would just be too much. It would be like hitting too hard, too quickly. And this one gives us a nice, I mean, it gives us some time to hang out with Fennec, and it gives us a nice build up to the Asajj thing, right? And a nice piece of connective tissue to the existing Bad Batch story and what's going to happen in the future. So that's kind of my take on it. So do you want to get like right into the episode, I guess, now at this point? Like, yeah, just talk about it. So we start off on Pabu, and we're kind of in this hunker down mode, right? Like they found out last episode that the Empire basically has a bounty out on Omega, so she needs to lay low, and they gotta kind of figure out what their next move is and how they're gonna handle this. In the midst of that, Phi comes back. This is the first time that we have seen her since the events of last season, since the tragic loss of her beautiful brown eyes. We don't talk about it.
Yep. Kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
I was hoping for a little something.
It's really clear that you know, they had these conversations at some other point. Right. The Bad Batch are trying to sort of figure out this M count stuff and what it means and how it relates to Omega, and they're just really looking for more information so that they know what they're up against, right? And and Phi points them towards Fennec. So Fennec comes back. We're gonna have to go see this bounty hunter, who the last time we saw her, kind of an adversary, but if you remember, she lets Omega go, right? She handled Cad Bane, which was impressive, to say the least. The boys are a little bit reluctant to go down this path, but obviously, like, we know that Fennec has a heart of gold and isn't a bad guy. She's just a pragmatist, I would say. But they see her as an adversary, so there's a little bit of tension there. And to add to the tension, Hunter sort of spots that Crosshair has this tremor, right? We talked about this a lot in the last couple of episodes, as Omega has been sort of trying to help him deal with whatever is going on. But this is the episode where we really start to figure out that it's more than it seems. Like, this is more than a physical ailment, right? Like, this is definitely a PTSD sort of thing. Hunter spotting it, you know, like, he's the leader, so he's responsible, and he's got to know, you know, if his team's at 100%, and seeing that Crosshair is maybe struggling a little bit. I think he's a little bit worried. I don't know if that worry is like worry for Crosshair or worry for them as a squad or a little bit of both, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I think okay. So hold up, back up. So you're asking, is rephrase that question for me, please.
So Hunter is kind of he's assessing this situation, and I'm just wondering from your perspective if you see this as him being like worried for the squad, like if Crosshair is keeping, because he's been very sort of confrontational about like, hey, Crosshair, you're keeping secrets, stop keeping secrets, sort of thing, and obviously this is a pretty big secret, and he's trying to hide it, like, Crosshair is not being upfront. And so the concern that we see from Hunter, because we do see concern from him in this scene, is it a concern for Crosshair, his brother, or is it a concern for his effectiveness as part of their squad? Like, where's the balance in that? Because I think it's both. I think it's
yeah,
both. But I'm just curious what your take is.
No, yeah,
Hunter Crosshair relationship.
I think you're 100% right. I feel like it's probably both, because obviously if Crosshair is not at his best, then the squad is not at its best. But I also think it's because, you know, not only is he concerned for Crosshair, but I think he's also probably, like you said, still concerned that in general, Crosshair isn't revealing everything. And it might even be more along the lines of like, well, he's keeping secrets. So is that because we can't trust him, or is that because he's really like something really wrong is going on? And, you know, because you're right, Hunter is absolutely picking up on all this stuff. But I don't think Hunter exactly knows, you know, I don't know that Hunter fully trusts Crosshair yet. Like, I know they had their moment in, not Trespass. I want to say Trespass because yeah, the snow level from Yoga. Yeah. In Return. And they kind of had their, like, you know, cleared the air moment, but like, I don't think Hunter is totally there yet where it's like, okay, yeah, everything's good. Everything is, you know, we're going to move forward here back to normal. I think he's still kind of hesitant. He has his reservations on what's going on with Crosshair. And I think a part of it is because he just kind of can't get inside his head and just isn't really sure. Like, all right, well, you know, that last episode, like you said, when Hauser was very slow to trust Crosshair, and, you know, Crosshair was saying, well, they tried to have me do, you know, they tried to get me into this like shadow clone, you know, program or whatever it was, and then the programming just didn't take. Hunter's keeping track of all that stuff. So like, Crosshair went through that, and now he's being like weird about this, you know, the hand stuff and his PTSD and all that stuff. So like, obviously there's, you know, Hunter's gonna have misgivings of, you know, having him on the squad, but like at the same time, you know, it's just because there's so many factors going on, like you said, like he's just kind of worried about you know, the effectiveness of the squad if he's there, whether that means he can't trust him because of his motives or he can't trust him because his head isn't fully in the game or whatever. That's where I'm landing from that.
Yeah. I think we're probably on the same page with this then. Like but it's an interesting dynamic. I mean, they kind of keep going back to it, but I do think it's worth exploring. That's the thing with having like a leader character, is that you have to constantly be giving them these weird team conflict things to sort out. Otherwise they don't have a purpose in the story. Right. It's like, I think back to like classic episodes of Ninja Turtles, and it's like Leonardo really doesn't have a lot to do most of the time. And then you see in the modern stuff, he's a very prominent character because they figured out that, well, if you just create conflict within the team, then it's Leonardo's job to resolve the conflict, right?
Right.
And where the real interesting stories lie is when the leader is not prepared for that conflict resolution, right? They don't have those skills yet, which works really well with Leonardo because he's a teenager, so his conflict resolution skills suck. So most of the time he just ends up fighting with Raph. But we have a similar thing here, and which, like, the Ninja Turtles analogy, I think, is always apt with Bad Batch, because they are very much of that 1990s, everybody on the squad has a role to play. You know, you can do a theme song and you can point out who everybody is by their special skill. This drama, this conflict between the two of them is a very natural, I think, organic, ongoing thing to explore.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's a little bit like, can you guys just talk to each other? Could you guys maybe just like say some words to one another and resolve this? But
that kind of drove me crazy on Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
Like it's like Johnny and Daniel just like constantly having misunderstandings and miscommunications. I was like, come on guys, like it's been four seasons of this.
Can you not understand that this is not the way that the other operates? But that's one of those ones where it's like I that conflict feels eternal to me because Johnny's too stupid to understand what he's doing wrong. Mm-hmm. And Daniel is too self-righteous to understand when he's doing something wrong, which he does a lot. And he is actually much worse than Johnny. His decision-making is so flawed so much of the time. And everybody around him keeps telling him. And yet he's like, I don't understand you guys. Don't you see this? And it's like, you are fighting a fight from the 1980s, but like, you need to settle down. Anyways, Cobra Kai, that's a different podcast. Yeah,
sorry.
We'll get into that when the final season drops. I'm sure you and I'll have lots to say over on the Thunderquack podcast about Cobra Kai. They go to whatever this planet is. I don't know if we got a name drop of it, but
Alabama in space.
Yeah. Well, that's not the first place that the first place that they go is whatever this underworld place is. And
a space station, right?
Okay. Was it? Okay. Yeah. 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 And you know, we're going to meet up with Fennec and we have our nice little, tete-a-tete back and forth with Fennec, and Fennec clearly has the upper hand here. And these guys are so dumb. The bad, they're so dumb. They're so just like constantly just like, I don't understand what you mean. Like what's happening right now? And without Tech, I feel like they're really, really at a disadvantage because he seemed to only ever be the one that had like at least some understanding of the situation. Cause Hunter's catchphrase is not even a word. It's just that confused look that he gives all the time. Whereas like somebody does something and then Hunter is like just taken aback by everything anybody does ever all the time. He's always just kind of like, wait, what? And this episode is a prime example of that because Fennec is like, yeah, I'll help you guys for a price, but not for money, for, you know, help with this thing. And they're like, well, we're not bad guys. And she's like, I'm not a bad guy. I'm a bounty hunter. Like, settle down. I got to get him. And you guys are going to help me. It's that simple. And then I will give you the information that you need, which is not so much information as it is a contact, right? It's a connection. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where we're going. And then this is where like in my notes, I say this episode seems very straightforward because this is the point where it's like, oh, they've been given a mission and now we're just going on the mission. So I refresh my memory. It's just Hunter and Wrecker go with her, right? Like it's not all of them, is it? Do they all go? Cause they're not all on the little skiff.
No, it's just Hunter and Wrecker.
Yeah, it's just Hunter, Wrecker, and Fennec, right? So they go off with her on her ship, and they go to Space Alabama or Louisiana or wherever you want to call it.
Yeah, Louisiana's probably
better. Yeah, to the Space Bayou, and they get on an airfoil, a Star Wars airfoil. The thing with this is that this is one of those ones where I'm like, okay, so it's a bit of a unique location, but it actually is giving a little bit of Nal Hutta vibe because
remember that
like in those episodes with Obi-Wan and Quinlan and all of that, like there was a bit of this sort of swamp because they're slugs, Nal Hutta. So it's a swamp and there was a little bit of this, but this one is like, this planet is like a direct, like it's the swamp. We are in the swamp. We're on the swamp planet, but it's not a Dagobah swamp, which is like a deep jungle, you know, South American type of swamp, right? This is more of like a Louisiana bayou, right down to the space crocodiles, space gators. Are they crocs or gators? I don't know. I can never
remember. Yes.
Somewhere in here we get the moment with Crosshair and Omega, right? Where she's like, that, like you're close, or your shot was close or whatever. And he says, close doesn't count. It's either a hit or a miss. Cause like the sort of the B storyline in this is all this stuff with Crosshair. Right. So I'm trying to remember again, we're remembering weeks ago. So I'm trying to remember exactly where what was going on with the two of them.
I honestly thought that this week was the week that Crosshair was down on the beach taking shots at Ben Diskind is the voice of the droid. Can't think of his name. AZ?
AZ. Was this one the one?
I thought it was, but I don't think so. I don't know. I really don't remember. Because, like, he was talking about his hand, and, like, I feel like that was the scene, right? And then Omega talks about meditation later.
This is one of those things about watching these episodes so close together.
This is a horrible idea. Why did we do this?
Yeah, and so long ago is that these things that are through lines, so this aspect that's a through line of Crosshair and the Tremor and his target practice and stuff, is that there, I believe there are multiple scenes, and it's like keeping those multiple scenes straight is really difficult. But yeah, you might be right. And I guess we'll find out in a couple weeks when this one airs, and then kind of go back to it and watch it again and be like, oh, okay. So I guess we let the cat out of the bag early by accident, but I, it's okay. I don't think that we ruined anything. I remember this conversation between the two of them where, like, Omega's trying to kind of, you know, comfort him. And I think that rightly so. I don't think that she's naive. I think that she is trying to let Crosshair know that his ability is not why he is loved. Right. Mm-hmm. Because I think that Crosshair is in this really tough place. And, there's a little bit of a play on the maturity thing here. Last week's episode had the moment where she calls him little brother, and we get that reminder that she's older than them because they're accelerated and she's not, right? So
I don't remember if I made this point.
Yeah,
Crosshair laughs at that. Have you ever seen Crosshair laugh at anything?
No. Well, and that's the thing, is that, like, that's Omega sort of like softening him a little bit, right?
Yeah.
He is finally getting from Omega what the rest of the squad already has. Mm. And obviously, like, Tech was sort of like the last one to sort of receive that wisdom from Omega last season, and then immediately died, quote unquote. Crosshair's finally now getting that treatment, right? That's where like when we go back to the stuff about the costumes, and I talk about how Crosshair puts up back on the Bad Batch armor, which they kept for him, right? Knowing that he'd eventually be back. I mean, I think it was kind of Wrecker alone making that choice. Because I think if I recall correctly, there's a couple of moments that we get in like season one and two, maybe it's like season two, where like we see the armor, we see it, and we see him like move it and out of the way sort of thing. But like nobody else kind of regards it, where you're kind of going like, well, Wrecker kind of hasn't given up hope that Crosshair will be back as much as Hunter had, you know, given up on him sort of thing. But now, you know, with this reintroduction to the squad, he's in the Bad Batch armor, but everybody else has moved on from that. Everybody else has grown past that, and it's exemplified by their newer customized repainted stuff. And he'll get there. I think he'll get there at some point this season, but he's not there yet. But these are like our indicators that this is happening, like that this is a gradual change that Omega is, a pun intended, under his armor, right? She's gotten through it. She's penetrated it. And so his guard is down with her, and it's not, his guard is never down with anyone. It never was from the beginning. He was a jerk from the moment that we met him in the Clone Wars. Right. But here he is with Omega, and he's allowing himself to be a little bit vulnerable, but still, he's still a little spiky. He's still a little bit of a hedgehog rolled up in a ball. But she'll get him. She'll get him out of there. She'll get him to uncurl at some point. But yeah, he's still working through it. And I do think that she is trying to just like communicate to him in the gentlest way that she knows how, of like, nobody cares. Like, you're the only one that cares if you can hit a target. I you know, like if you are like the master unparalleled marksman of the Star Wars universe, right? Like everybody else is just glad to have you back. But Crosshair has invested so much of his identity in this idea of his prowess, his skill, and this special ability. I mean, like as 99, right? Like as the defectives, they kind of have to, because otherwise you're going to define yourself by that, by the fact that you're a defective. So the fact that these four have these special abilities, it that then becomes the thing that they're defining themselves by, right? But Omega is just trying to teach that lesson of like, this doesn't have to be it. Like, it really doesn't have to be it. Your life is not over because you are not a perfect shot. Like, close is close. So I think that Crosshair is the one who's wrong in this. So it's either a hit or a miss. That's very binary thinking. It's an absolute, and we know what Obi-Wan says about absolutes.
Yeah, he says he makes a very absolute statement about absolutes.
He does make a very absolute statement. I think this is really interesting. This to me is the most interesting part of the season, is this Crosshair stuff. And it's once again Star Wars making me fall in love with a character that I kind of didn't like. And it's always like these bald guys. It's Lesage and Crosshair. But you'll never get me to like Ki-Adi Mundi. You hear me, Lucasfilm?
Why not?
Never.
What's wrong with Ki-Adi Mundi?
He's the worst. In what way? So it is very clear to me in my reading of The Phantom Menace that in the scene when the rest of the Jedi Council, when Mace and Yoda are speaking to Anakin, and it's like, oh, you know, or not to Anakin, like after they've spoken to Anakin, they're speaking to Qui-Gon about not training, like he's not going to train the boy. Mace is very like, not happening. Yoda's like, we have hesitations about this. And Ki-Adi Mundi is sitting there smug, like, yeah, this kid sucks.
What?
Totally. He just watch him. He's like, he's on Mace's side. He's 1,000% on Mace's side. And I think that it was a thing of like, it was meant to be like they discussed and they were like, we can only move forward with this. This is so breaking so many protocols. This is such a bad idea. We can only move forward on this if it's unanimous. And Mace and Ki-Adi are like, I didn't like that kid. I didn't like his stupid bull haircut. I didn't like his stupid slave clothes. I don't like any of this. And Mace Windu is just being a jerk, as we all know, because he's just a jerk. And Ki-Adi Mundi, it's like, we don't really know a lot about Ki-Adi Mundi, but what we do know about Ki-Adi Mundi is that he is also a jerk. Seriously, in all of the EU stuff, he is not a particularly nice Jedi. I would consider him like the counter of Plo Koon, right? Because what we know about Plo Koon now, we didn't really at the time, but what we know now from the Clone Wars and from the characterization that Dave gave him is that Plo Koon is like a very compassionate, very empathetic Jedi master, right? Like he's very much about feelings and expressing emotions and stuff like that. He's just got this like he's got like a cool dad vibe about him, you know. And I think that Ki-Adi Mundi is like the opposite side of that spectrum, where it's like he's a jerk dad. He's just a jerk dad, and he's judgmental, and this is just by virtue of the fact that he's one of the only ones that gets to speak in Phantom Menace. But
man, this is feels like projecting.
maybe, but I don't think I'm alone. Like I think that a lot of people will agree with me that Ki-Adi Mundi has like a bit of a jerk vibe.
I've pulled the scene up. I'm watching it silently now because I want to see his body language and his facial expressions. You're talking about the scene where it's nighttime, right? Not the sunset where they're testing Anakin, or are you talking about that one?
You know, I mean, like I'm talking out of my ass because it's been a very long time since I've watched the movie.
Okay.
So this is all going on memory, but, but yeah, but I maintain that there is at least one moment, whether it's in the them interrogating this child, as opposed to like talking to him and having a conversation. It's like, you're afraid. And it's like, yeah, he's afraid. You guys are being jerks. Like you're all being really mean to this 10-year-old.
Well, yeah, he's like, you're thinking about your mom.
Yeah, I'm thinking about your mom. there is at least one moment, either in that scene or in the nighttime scene when they're talking to Qui-Gon and telling him that they don't permit him to train Anakin. He shares a look, I think, with Mace. Like there's just like, it's like a very brief thing of just like sort of them conferring. My opinions on Mace Windu as a Jedi, Mace is the exemplification of what's wrong with the Jedi Order in the old, like towards the end of the Republic and in the twilight of the Republic. He is exactly why they fall. Like he exemplifies exactly why they fall. Shatterpoint just like drives it home. He is focused on martial prowess and power. He is way more concerned, and Clone Wars goes into this with the Ahsoka stuff. He is way more concerned with them maintaining their position of authority within the Republic than he is with doing what's right. Right. And of all of the Jedi, of all the ones on the council, he seems the least concerned with both the Sith and the fact that they are fighting a war. Right. He's concerned about like strategic things of like, we're running out of soldiers, but he is not concerned with the moral implication of the fact that the Jedi are fighting a galactic civil war on behalf of the Republic when they really should be on the outside of it. They shouldn't be involved. And like Yoda has those misgivings and voices them. And throughout the Clone Wars series, we see other Jedi bring this stuff up and be like, this none of this feels right, you know. But Mace Windu is never one of those ones. Mace Windu is always like, we need to win this war, we need to put an end to it. And then it all comes to a head in he gives Palpatine exactly what he needs when he's like, he's too dangerous to be left alive, which is the thing that Anakin needs to hear come out of the mouth of a Jedi master that he's supposed to look up to and respect, that seals the deal on all of the lies that Palpatine has been feeding him, which is that the Jedi are evil, right? Mm-hmm. Because what Mace says in that moment is not a Jedi thing. That is a Sith platitude of like, oh, he's too powerful to be left alive, we should kill him, right? I mean, quite literally earlier in the movie, Palpatine does this. He says it to him. He's too dangerous. And, you know, it's only natural. You wanted revenge, right? Like all of that stuff, which Palpatine seated there knowing the future because he has the benefit of foresight through the dark side, knowing that there would be an opportunity to then like reinforce that. Anakin would feel guilty about killing Dooku. Because Anakin's a better Jedi than Mace Windu, because Mace Windu would not feel guilty about killing Palpatine. Anyways.
Mace Windu wanted to assassinate Count Dooku.
Yeah. 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 Like Mace does a lot of bad stuff in the Clone Wars, guys. Go watch the Clone Wars. Just watch the Mace Windu stuff in the Clone Wars and pay real close attention. Mace is one of the reasons why the Jedi fall. Like he is very responsible for it, both in his position as a master on the council, but just like his own actions and choices. Like he, and Ki-Adi Mundi, I think, is like lockstep with them. Like, I feel like
they're killing me, man. I just watched both of these scenes. Ki-Adi Mundi gives nothing. No. He's so stoic the whole time.
Did you read the Outlander comics?
The only thing I remember from that is that he had like a bunch of wives because his species was dying. Yeah. And like, so he was actually allowed to have children.
So there's like his connection into, is it Asha'red Het? Yeah. The Tusken Jedi, right? There's a bunch of stuff with that. And so like I am definitely like reading stuff into the Phantom Menace that comes from EU sources.
Okay.
But in Outlander, he's the lead character. He's the protagonist of that story, but I don't know that he's necessarily heroic. Right.
Okay.
It's an interesting thing. Cause I don't know that like they weren't allowed to be as overt with some of the storytelling as I think they would have if it wasn't, you know, Star Wars and connected to the bigger thing. But it was also pre-Disney, so they had a little bit more freedom than they would now. But there's some stuff, and I'm not alone. I'm sure that there's a lot of other people out there who are with me of like, no, Ki-Adi Mundi is a bad dude. Yeah. But hey, listen.
This is the first I'm hearing of this, man. That's crazy.
Don't get me started on Oppo Rancisis, okay? That guy. No, I don't know anything about that character. He's just a weird snake dude in the background.
I'm looking forward. There's a book coming out. I think, what is it? The Living Force?
Yeah, yeah. And it's
like the whole council.
The author who did Obi-Wan and A New Dawn, right? John Jackson Miller. Right? Cool. I'm pretty sure.
I'm gonna find out in 2 seconds because I have it on my word. Yeah, John Jackson Miller.
Yeah. Yeah. That means it'll be good. I don't know if it'll be like phenomenal, but it'll at least be good. Because he's a pretty solid Star Wars writer. There's a comic, a Dark Horse one, Star Wars Jedi Council.
That one's awesome.
So rad. Such a great series.
I love that.
And it's like basically the most recent conflict before that the Jedi had to deal with before the Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
And there's lots of really, really good stuff in that. About the other Jedi Council members that are not Yoda and Mace Windu. And I'm trying to remember if Plo, or sorry, not if Plo, if Ki-Adi-Mundi plays an integral role in that. I'm trying to remember because there are some members that aren't on the council.
Yeah, I don't think he went on the mission. I think Ki-Adi-Mundi was promoted at the end of it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Wasn't it he took the Jedi who died, like he took his seat at the end?
I think so, because it's the big dude. It's the one that's like
friend.
Kukruk, like the guy from the clone from the Gendi stuff. He's the same species as that one.
No. Kukruk was his apprentice.
Okay. No, I know. I'm just saying they're the same species.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's the one who dies in that one. And then, yeah. And I think you're right. I think that Ki-Adi-Mundi is the one who takes his spot. It's a great comic, man. That's a great comic because it's got like all these Jedi Council members. And the art is fantastic in that one. I'm just looking at covers right now. Cool. What are we talking about? What podcast is this?
We were talking about real quick. No, is there no re-release of Star Wars Outlander? Because like I read like one or two issues and I'm like looking into it now because I would love to get like there is a Legends Marvel re-release because
I think it's in one of the Epic collections as well.
Okay.
I think that there's an Epic collection that's like prequel stuff. And that would be one of them. Let me see what the Epic collections are. Cause I don't know them off the top of my head. It's one of those things where like, I didn't start getting them when they started coming out. And so like, I only have a couple. I have the Infinities one and then one other one. What's the other one that I have? I can't remember.
I will also have you know that after talking about Cestus Deception last week, I actually ordered that book because I've never read it and I really want to. It sounded really cool.
Nice. So the Jedi Council one is collected in the Epic Collection Rise of the Sith, Volume 1. So that's in there. And then let's see, there's Infinities, New Republic, Rebellion, the original Marvel Years, Legacy, Clone Wars. No, it's not in there. The newspaper strips. Man, they did a newspaper strips one. I need that. I need to get that.
That's cool.
Old Republic Volume 2, The Rebellion. Man, they've done so many. Here we go. Rise of the Sith Volume 2, which has... Is Outlander in here? It's got all the Phantom Menace stuff. Man, I would have thought that it would be in there if it was in any of these so far. Because it's not going to be in any of the Clone Wars ones. The Menace Revealed. That's interesting. There's Jango Fett open seasons and then a bunch of Star Wars issues.
Oh, cool.
Man, yeah, I'm not seeing it. There's a New Republic one that has all of the Heir to the Empire, Dark Force Rising, and Last Command. That's one that I should have so that I can read through those and not have them be the Zahn versions. I didn't realize they have done so many of these Epic collections. The fact that I'm not seeing Outlander in here is actually kind of annoying me because
didn't you say it was in the Rise of the Sith Epic Collection too?
No, Volume 1. That was the Jedi Council one, just the one that we were talking about a second ago. Okay. Which is, that's why I brought it up, because we were talking about it. If you want to go grab it in that one. Oh my gosh, this list just keeps going. Tales of the Jedi is all collected. Wow. No, I am not seeing Outlander in here. The Menace revealed. Unless it's in, because there's a bunch of these that are just like labeled Star Wars 36, 37, 38, 39. Mm. So unless Outlander was originally just released in that way and was not actually, I thought it was done as a mini series though.
I thought it was. Yeah. I thought there was like, I don't know, 10 or 15 issues or something of it.
There are so many volumes of The Menace Revealed and Rise of the Sith that it's like, it's got to, it, you'd think it would have to be in one of these, but it doesn't look like it is. And then Modern Era Epic Collections. Yeah, those are like the newer ones. Which one has, one of them's the Kanan one. I have that, but it's not, I don't think it's labeled as an Epic Collection. It's just the 12 issues of Kanan. Mm. But okay, back to Rebel Cells, back to the thing we're actually supposed to be talking about, because we haven't even gotten to the best part of this episode yet, right? Because we're on the space bayou. I will just note Omega has another new outfit. So like she got multiple new outfits in this season, which is crazy to me that they're like, because she had the one outfit and then she had like her cold weather outfit on that one planet in the return. So we saw two different outfits from her in that. Obviously we also saw her in the prison uniform or whatever on Tantus. And we saw her in a different outfit in a different approach, because they were like disguised, right? So she's had four completely new character models. I'm not completely new because her head stays the same, but for like four new outfit changes in this season, which is that's a lot of resources to put towards one character. For animation. But I just think that's really interesting that they just keep giving her new styles. Yeah, when we get back to the boys and Fennec on Space Louisiana planet, they're on their airfoil, and then you know they get attacked by space gators, and they have to fight them, because like there's no other conflict yet, so it's like oh, we just got to fight some space gators, but that's fine, it's cool, it's great. The space gators have a cool design, and Kyle had some notes because he knew we wouldn't be on this episode. So he sent us some notes and he just wanted us to let you guys know that he loves this scene more than anything from Knights of the Old Republic. I think like that's first and foremost, the most important thing that he wanted you guys to know is that he said actually that, and I'm quoting him, he said, actually, I think Knights of the Old Republic is trash compared to them fighting alligators in this swamp. So
he did say that. I was there.
It was really weird because we were like, listen, Kyle, like you don't need to go that hard. It was all right. You know, it was a cool scene. We all liked it, but like, I don't understand why you're, and then he like slammed down his drink and he said, you'll say it on the podcast or I'll find you. And I was like, okay, Kyle, this is the thing is that Kyle comes off,
intense, man.
He comes off as a very unassuming guy. I on the podcast, but I'll just let you guys know that behind closed doors, Kyle is a little bit of a loose cannon. He's a little bit of a loose cannon. So just so you guys know, I hope that everybody understands that we're making funny yuck yuck jokes right now. What he actually said about this scene is like, this is the sort of thing that Wrecker exists for. Like, this is why he exists in the first place, is to fight space alligators, right? No. I think that we're both in agreement with that of like, yeah, to wrestle rancors and space gators, like that's why Wrecker is Wrecker. So they were like, yeah, if we're gonna be on a swamp, then Wrecker has to fight a space gator, and he did, and it's pretty great.
He did the thing.
Yeah. And then I have a note that just says Fennec is such a bounty hunter. I don't know what this is specifically in reference to, but I think it's just her attitude, right?
Yeah.
She really doesn't care if they live or die. She's like, whatever. They finally track down this guy that they're hunting, Sylar, who is a big mantis guy. I don't know. So I wonder if he's the same species that we saw in, is that Mando or Boba Fett? I think it's in Mando. We see that Peli is playing cards against a big mantis guy at one point, isn't she? Or is he a big mantis?
Oh, no, that's a different guy. Because he's from A New Hope, that guy.
Is he? Okay.
That's a good point. Is he the same species? No, I think he's like bigger.
Okay. Okay.
He was like a doctor.
He's like doctor something. Yeah.
Dr. Mandible. Dr. Mandible.
Yeah. Man, listen, all right, not to detour again, but if you don't love that part of the Mando Book of Boba Fett stuff, then you need to reassess your love for Star Wars. Because Peli, first of all, one of the best characters that's been introduced in all of that stuff. She's so great. Her interaction, and like just Doctor, she's playing cards against Dr. Mandible, and it's just like, it's not a thing. It's not a thing, guys. Like, it's just, it's Star Wars. Star Wars is weird. Get used to it. If you don't like it, man, I don't know. Go watch Dune. No, Dune is even weirder than Star Wars. Dune is where the weird in Star Wars comes from, I'm pretty sure. But I don't know. The Expanse. That's my example. Go watch The Expanse. Hey, you want some sci-fi that is not fun at all? Go watch The Expanse. Go read a book, The Expanse book. All right? There's like 10 of those books. Go read those books. Have fun. Have fun with your no fun, boring sci-fi universe. We're over here fighting space gators and playing cards with Dr. Mandible, and I wouldn't have it any other way. That's what Star Wars is all about. This, as I have said before, and I will say again, it's about the little guys. And if Dr. Mandible isn't a little guy, I don't know what is. Sylar, however, is not a little guy. He is not a little guy.
He is not.
Because a little guy has nothing to do with size, right? We know this. It has nothing to do with size. It has everything to do with spirit. But Sylar's spirit is not the spirit of a little guy. Sylar's spirit is the spirit of a gross bug man that vomits the acid on you. So, and that's what he does. That's what he does. But he also has a cool knife. So if his ridiculous size and big claw arms were not enough to contest with, he also spits acid vomit and has like an electro vibro knife thing that you also have to contend with, because it's Star Wars, and Star Wars is nothing if not a hat on a hat on a hat. Especially the animated stuff where they have no limitations, right? Like, that's the great thing about the animated stuff. It's Dr. Mandible is a good example of like in the live action stuff. Yeah, he's not moving a lot. He's not moving a lot, guys. He's a practical effect. It's really cool to see a practical effect, but he's not doing a heck of a lot. He's just kind of standing there. But that's okay, because that's what Star Wars looks like. It's supposed to. That's the joke, you guys. It doesn't need to be real. It just needs to be fun and entertaining. Don't take it too seriously. It's about space wizards and stuff. Like, settle down. But when you're in animation, you can get that bug man to just like bounce off the walls, which is what happens here. It's a good fight. It's a good fight.
It's fine. It's cool. It's fun.
I like when he tries to escape and then they shut off his escape, sort of like they shut down his escape. And
yeah, that was cool.
And it's like, but then it's like almost like immediate regret of like, oh, now he's really going to fight us. it escalates the situation. But, you know, like, listen, you've got Hunter, Wrecker, and Fennec. And Fennec is mostly just, like, hanging back and not doing a heck of a lot. She's like, no, this is what you guys are earning what I'm going to give you. Like, you're not just getting. Get the job done. But you've got Wrecker and Hunter, so you'll be fine. Like, they'll handle it, which they do. And then I think Wrecker says to her, you were right to bring us along, to which Fennec replies, I'm always right. And I was like, perfect. It, you know what? It's Ming-Na Wen. Just, she is the best. She's just the best. And even if it's just her voice, she's still the best. And Fennec is such a great character. Not because of anything that they do with the writing necessarily. I mean, I think as a bounty hunter, she's a pretty stock standard bounty hunter. But I think that what makes her stand out as a character and what makes it work so well is the performance with Ming-Na Wen. Mm. Like, she brings an attitude and a believability to it. I that just sells it for me, that like these gigantic men who, you know, wrestle rancors and fight the Empire and everything, they're just like, I guess we have to do what she says, because she just commands that authority, right? I like it. I'm down for it. I think that Fennec is great.
Fennec is cool.
I
do prefer live action Fennec over.
Oh yeah, well, Clone Wars Fennec.
Not Clone Wars, Bad Batch Fennec.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. But it's just the only thing that bugs me about Fennec in Bad Batch really is that she's wearing the same outfit.
Yeah, kind of weird, right? Like,
it's like you've been wearing the same thing for like 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on, lady. I thought you're a successful bounty hunter. Spring for a new outfit. But that's Star Wars for you. You know, everybody's got their signature look. Except Omega, apparently, who's allowed to have a whole wardrobe like Padme, which is an interesting choice, but I'm not going to argue with it. speaking of Omega, yeah, I think you might be right about some more of the stuff that we've talked about actually being from this episode. We're sort of conflating things, because this is when we cut back and we get into like the meditation stuff.
Yeah,
and Omega notes that at some point off screen, in the episode when they rescued Gunji, he taught her about meditation, to which I had the question of like, did Gunji sense something about Omega that the rest of us are just kind of figuring out? Did he maybe vibe on that M count? Maybe not consciously, but maybe also consciously. I don't know.
Interesting questions, which we actually don't know. It's fun. It's such a relief that now we can, like, I don't have to worry about slipping about anything.
Yeah, because like, we don't know anything for from here. Yeah.
It sucks that we've like, the lines are kind of blurred, but, like, it's just like, okay, finally, we can not worry about whatever. I think that's perfectly reasonable. I mean, Jedi are able to sense other Jedi, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so because otherwise, why would Gunji impart some of this wisdom, right? But yeah, I like that. I like the callback to that and reminding us that character was a part of this story, and that Omega had that interaction. But also, like, to me, kind of a conspicuous name drop. Not like, I don't think we're getting Gunji back anytime soon, but like, I think that moment of being like, a Jedi taught me how to do a thing and I do it. And it's like, well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean, Omega? Why are you doing Jedi stuff, Omega? You're compatible with the M count thing. Why are you doing Jedi stuff,
Omega? Yeah.
I think it is just a crumb on the trail of her being force sensitive, and by the end of the season we might get a little bit more. Maybe in the next episode, maybe when Asajj shows up, we'll get a little bit more. But
Well, so that kind of brings us to the next point. Like, after everything is said and done, Fennec reaches out to her contact, and you are of the opinion that the contact is Ventress.
1,000%. Okay. 1,000%.
Here's why you're wrong. It's the rest of Delta Squad.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, that makes sense. That actually makes more sense. I think you're right. I think you're definitely right. Yeah.
Including Scorch. He's already joined them.
Yeah. And Kyle wanted us to know that he thinks it's HK-47. So. Which
thousands of years later,
I said to him, was like, this is another one of your wild takes just to be contrarian, isn't it? And he just looked at me. I'm telling you guys, it's really like, he is a difficult person to work with sometimes. I can only say this because he's not here. And
don't meet your heroes.
Yeah. And that's it. That's the episode. Somehow we managed to make an hour out of this. I don't know. I mean, somehow was that we talked a lot about Star Wars.
We talked not about the episode. That's how.
And Ki-Adi Mundi and what a jerk he is. But I don't know. Like this was just kind of a break. It was just kind of like a pause in between, I think, big stuff happening. When we look back on the season, I think that we'll look back on it and be like,
I don't see this being, when I rewatch this series or season or whatever, like, I don't think this is going to be the one I'm checking my emails and maybe working.
Yeah, it's not essential viewing, right? Yeah. Like, if you were putting together you got to watch this sort of list, this is one where you'd be like, I think you can skip over it. Just give the context for the next episode. But that's why, I mean, I, at this point now, it is just waiting for that. It's kind of like we get to have two season premieres. I'm kind of waiting, going like, ooh, can we get early access? are we going to get early access
and make this mistake all over again? Yeah. I'm ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's do it.
I'm ready to ruin the rest of the season. Yeah.
I think if we do that, though, we should, I mean, me, you, and Kyle should try to record closer to the time that we watched it.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we planned on doing it, and then it didn't work out that way, and we got so cavalier about, like, we got plenty of time.
Yeah.
And then I realized as time went and those episodes expired and I couldn't rewatch them before we were recording, it's like, oh, man. Dropped the ball on this a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think we thought about the fact that the access would go away at a certain point.
Yeah.
And not be able to revisit them and check back in beforehand. But here we are. We're on the other side of it. Next week will be our first episode back where we are in sync with you guys. So the release schedule might change a little bit. But because we've been putting these out basically, I mean, I've been putting them out about 15 minutes after the episode airs, which is nice. It's kind of cool to be able to do that. But that won't be the case anymore. So
we think. We don't know.
Yeah, we think.
We're pretty sure.
Pretty sure. Cool. Well, I think that does it for this episode. You got nothing else, right?
Where did Crosshair and Omega really like land anywhere? It was just like they just had like the little moments and that was it, right? Like there wasn't really an actual story going on with them other than just kind of like character bonding moments.
I think that Omega is just trying to work with Crosshair on this PTSD stuff, right?
Yeah.
I think that's about it.
Yeah. Then I got nothing really else.
Cool. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. And go check out our Patreon, patreon.com/thunderquack. These episodes don't go up very early on those. I guess like when I'm releasing them at like midnight, I'm releasing them on Patreon like at midnight. And then they're going up for everybody else. It's a whole thing. But you can get early access to Force Perspectives and Perfect 10 and Thunderquack Podcast and exclusive access to Off the Record over there. It's $5 a month or $54 for the year, which you save money. You save $6 over the course of the year. Patreon.com/Thunderquack. Did I say that already? Go there. Go do that. That's it for this one, and we will see you guys on the next episode. I don't have the title of the next episode. I really need to have IMDb open or something for these episodes. But whatever it's called, the one with Asajj Ventress,
Delta Squad Returns. Delta Squad positive returns. Is the name of the next episode.
So we will catch you guys on the next one.
Looks like Bad Batch is blasting off again.